So the question was asked, how many issues could we really bring with this song, Zochayni Na V'chazkeni Na? So we'll try to address that. But before we do, we have to remember that it's easy to find issues with things. I personally have issues with the song too. But I think as an introduction, we have to remember that it's usually better not to have issues with things. Most of us tend to find issues with things, and I say us because me too. But at the same time, if we could forgo the issues, it's usually a good idea to forgo the issues. And that being said, so now let's analyze the verse and the song. Shimshon was born with certain responsibilities and certain strengths. He was crippled in both his legs, and yet he had awesome strength. His back was about the size of the Beis Medrash of Machon Meir. It's a pretty big back. I mean, that's a giant. That's his back. His back was big. He was able to hold the two doors of Aza on his back. They were very, very big, the Gemara says. So he had a huge back. I mean, it crippled in both his legs. He had hair coming down all over. I mean, he never shaved his head. So he had a wild beard and wild hair. And must have been a pretty scary sight. But Shimshon was very powerful. And he was a tremendous tzaddik and a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was one of the greatest sages. He was the only one about whom the Tanakh says if he wanted to sit in judgment alone, he could. He was clean enough in his ability to discern what the halacha was. He didn't need to have a tribunal. He was ka'achad shiftei Yisrael. His judgment was like God. He was able to sit down and get clarity in his learning. We don't have anyone else that the Tanakh says that about. And when Yaakov blesses the tribe of Dan, Yaakov's blessing focuses about Shimshon. And Yaakov gives a special prayer for Shimshon's success. That's a pretty exceptional person.
But how could someone like you describe him so big that can actually let his eyes decide?
So God wanted Shimshon to marry into Philistines, so that he'd start having issues with them and he'd have room to have personal claims with them. Shimshon's job in this world was different than every other judge. Every other judge was responsible to gather the Jewish army and lead them to war and lead them to repent. For some reason, that wasn't God's plan for Shimshon. Shimshon was the last shofet. After him, we have Eli HaKohen and Shmuel, who led us into the kingdom of Shaul, etc. And for some reason, God wanted that the Jews would remain subservient. He never succeeded in removing the yoke of the Philistines from the Jews. But that we'd have this godly representative in this world who would punish the Philistines. It seems like that was the godly intent. He doesn't do what every other judge does. He doesn't gather the Jews and say, repent, and then judge them and bring them to a state where they could take on the Philistines. But he does judge them and teach them Torah, and go out and take his personal vengeance of the Philistines. And in order for him to have this relationship with the Philistines, so that his actions will not be interpreted as representative of the Jewish people, he needs to enter into a dialogue with the Philistines, and the source of that dialogue is marriage. So he was supposed to marry into the Philistines. That was God's plan. And yet, it wasn't supposed to evolve the way it was, the way it had. On some level, Shimshon was attracted to her looks. And Shimshon did look at her. And our sages say that he erred in that. He was supposed to marry Philistine, but he wasn't supposed to do it exactly the way he did it. There was some level at which this great tzaddik did err. And for that error, he was punished that the Philistines took out his eyes at the end of his days. What?
Took out his eyes. It was a great error.
Well, the Mishnah says, Shimshon holach achar einav. Shimshon followed his eyes, even though God had planned and guided him to marry a Philistine. But the actual fulfillment of that duty of marrying a Philistine woman, he did look at her looks. He was attracted on some level.
The way that the Hamlin
strength versus the spiritual weakness. And it's not this, it's even more harsh than the way you're making it seem.
This is, I don't know what she says, and we could look at it. Okay, so you want, we'll see. Want to bring it? Yeah, bring it, let's see. If we close, the primary issues are, firstly, do we really want to sing this? It's like people singing Timche Timche Zecher Amalek, Timche Timche Zecher Amalek. You should wipe out Amalek. Yeah, that's what we sing. I don't know. It's a mitzvah, okay, right? But is that what we're supposed to be singing about? I don't know. I have a question. Are we on the level where we do every mitzvah with happiness? Do we really give every penny we give to tzedakah out of happiness? Do we really, everything we do is out of happiness? And the happiness that we have when we perform mitzvahs is a happiness that stems from our connection to God, from the recognition that what we're doing is a mitzvah? So I would be very careful. It's been bothering me since I was a kid. So my Rebbeim answered me like you, it's a mitzvah. The song Timche Tzecher Amalek, when I was a kid, that bothered me. Yeah, there's a song about wiping out Amalek. So, fine. You want to sing it, sing it. But I question whether we're really on the level that it's right for us to sing it. I wonder if we're so holy, we're so pure. I have many questions, and that's just one of them. And whether we can really say that if we would do it, our happiness would be a happiness that we're performing a mitzvah. Because if God forbid that happiness would be a personal happiness, then I wonder if that would be right. That's one issue. We have an issue with our neighbors. We have an issue with the Palestinians. And it might be that the solution involves war, and it might be that the solution involves many actions. But I don't think that we're supposed to rejoice at that. They're human beings, and their behavior might force us to take certain actions against them. But I don't think that we're supposed to rejoice at the fact that we're going to have to take those actions against them. So that's the first issue that bothers me with this song. I think that there's a certain confusion as to our relationship to them. The fact that they're an enemy, yeah, I think it's pretty clear that they're our enemy. The fact that we're going to have to contend with that enemy, and that might involve force and other things, yeah, it definitely seems that way. But are we happy about the fact that we're going to have to do it? I don't think so. I don't think we're happy about it. The Torah teaches us that even in our wars to conquer the land of Israel, we first offer them peace on our conditions, but we do offer them peace. We're not looking to destroy anyone. We're not looking to fight anyone. I don't think that's the direction the Torah taught us. So that's the first issue that really bothers me about singing songs like this. I don't understand that we're on a level that it's right for us to sing songs like this. I could understand that there can be people that can be very, very happy about the performance of mitzvot, and for them, wiping out Amalek is like putting on tefillin. But you know what? I don't think we're there. I don't think so. So that's number one. Number two is that they're changing a word in the song. It's a pasuk, and they change it from Pilishtim to Palestine, or they change it. So I'm not so clear on that, the permissibility of doing that with a verse from the Torah. And the third thing is that when was this verse stated? This verse really is representative of a time of weakness, of a time where Shimshon says, God, let me avenge one eye while I'm committing suicide. Shimshon is dying. He's going to die over there. And he kills more Philistines in his death than he did his whole life. But bottom line, he's dying. I mean, that's not where I'd like to see us. I'm not looking to avenge one eye. I'm looking to solve the issue, and I'll be happy if justice is met in this world, and murderers will be brought to trial and judged a fair trial. But I'm not looking to finish my life in doing it, not at all. So what exactly am I doing by quoting a verse like this? So I don't understand the song from all those aspects. But at the end of the day, if I'm at a wedding and that's what they're singing and they're dancing, so I try not to walk out. Sometimes I do. And even if I do it, I try to do it quietly. I don't have strength to dance to a song like that. It bothers me. So, you know, you have to feel like dancing when you dance. So when they sing that, I don't feel like dancing. It's not out of protest. It's not because I have an issue with the song. I do have an issue with the song, but it bothers me so much. It's difficult for me to sing it, to dance when that's the song that's playing. So that's when I go and I catch up on my drink. That's when I go, if I have to make a phone call, that's when I go, I do have to eat something. But again, not out of protest, because I think that we should try in life to have less issues rather than more. If we allow ourselves to take things to task, then we'll have hundreds of issues. There are many songs you could take to task. There are many issues. No, I wouldn't say that, but just saying as an attitude, it's better to flow. It's better not to have issues. You know, you'll find people who don't eat anywhere. I don't trust the kashrus here. And over here they have mixed seating. And over here they have women whose hair is uncovered. And yeah, you could always have issues. And you could always try to find room to flow with it. So long as it's within the guidelines of halacha, it's better to flow. It's better to be easygoing, I think.